Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
All right, hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael, your host. If you are new to our podcast, I know we have brought in quite a bit of new listeners thanks to the final season of Star Trek Discovery. But if you are new, you can find us pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck. Leave us a review. Give us a thumbs up. Hi, David. How are you?
How's it going, everybody? Doing good, actually. Better than last time when I was coughing up a lung.
Yeah, David, very unprofessional.
Very unprofessional.
Next time you do that, I will throw you into the agonizer booth. Yeah, the agonizer booth.
Or no, you could just throw me into that, you know, device that sucks out oxygen and just take away all my breathing.
Or I might make you hang out with Stamets and listen to all his morosity.
I might enjoy that.
Oh, honestly. Really? Really?
I might enjoy
it. I think Colbert might be a little jealous. Well, maybe not after this episode, because it seems like they might be working towards, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but you might be working towards a split between the two of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, I think we need to see more rather. I can't speak now, David. Maybe I need a universal translator for myself.
For yourself.
It does seem like it could go in that direction, especially because of what the writers are doing with Adira and Gray this season.
Yes.
And the whole aspect at the end of the episode with the conversation between Culver and Book.
Because the two are individuals. If that's what they're saying, cool.
Yeah.
But it has to lead to something.
Yeah. We will get into all of that. All right. So we're going to be talking about episode 6 of the 5th and final season of Star Trek Discovery titled Whistlespeak, directed by Chris Byrne and written by Kenneth Lynn and Brandon Schultz. The synopsis: Captain Burnham must consider breaking the Prime Directive when a local tradition in a pre-warp society threatens Tilly's life. Culbert tries to connect with Stamets, and Adira steps up when Rayner assigns them a position on the bridge. So, David, give me your initial thoughts on the episode.
I'm very conflicted with this episode, actually.
Oh, really?
I like what they did in this episode. There was a lot of great moments in this episode, but I really felt afterwards, I couldn't explain it. I came in really into this episode and feeling a little off. Like I felt that at the end of the episode, I was like, okay, it was a good episode, but it felt like we were meandering. It felt like we were just spinning our wheels because, like, I don't know if it's just because they have this issue of they introduced this quote unquote MacGuffin of the progenitors and trying to wrap this story around this conflict over the progenitor weaponry and trying to give some gravity to the implications of what this means for the Discovery crew. And don't get me wrong, I like the whole story arc of basically finding purpose and meaning in life. I love what they've done up to this point, but there was just something that just felt really off with this episode. I felt like it was static. Like, okay, we already know a lot of the stuff that they were alluding to. You know, we know that basically Culber is having this question of crisis and having to try to find purpose in his life and connecting it to essentially the search for the Holy Grail, which is the progenitors. The progenitors is the Grail, essentially. And that type of story is great, but it was like kind of like in this episode by the end of it, I'm like going, I didn't feel any closer. And we only have 4 episodes left.
Okay.
You know,
I actually understand what you're saying. I'm going to reframe your thoughts just a bit to make sure. Basically, you feel like, hey, look, this is the final season of Star Trek Discovery. We have 10 episodes total. We have 4 episodes left after this episode. We're on episode 6, and you feel like it's meandering because it's essentially repeating some of the ideas that we already understand, and it didn't really move the actual overall plot or myth arc, let's call it, of the season forward in any really big way.
Yeah, in any big way. And we're past the halfway point. I mean, technically, this should be like the mid-season break, usually.
Well, the 5th episode did feel like that for me.
Yeah.
It did feel like the mid-season point. Well, David, I like I said, I don't know if I agree, but I do understand where you're coming from. Let me pose a couple ideas to you and see if maybe this can help reconcile some of these issues, okay? So typically, we as viewers have been, not typically, we've all been conditioned to modern television. Modern television is serialized, and there's very seldom room for low-stakes installments.
Okay.
And what I mean by low stakes, think of old school television where you may have a guiding myth arc. Let's look at X-Files. That's a perfect example of early. I would say it isn't golden age television. Golden age television probably didn't happen until like the 2000s, but it was the beginning stages of what would be golden age television.
Yeah.
It was a starting point. X-Files had a myth arc. But then you also had those random, silly episodes that really didn't matter to Mulder's story or Scully's story. And that's what I call low stakes. It's entertaining. It fleshes out the world a bit. It might even reiterate certain things that we know, but overall, it's low stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by low stakes television as a whole, just point to any CSI, Hawaii 5-0, that's low stakes television.
Yeah.
And an episode like this in Star Trek Discovery, whistle speak, I would also consider this episode low stakes. Much of Strange New Worlds is low stakes.
It's low stakes when you put it in that way, yeah.
And that's not a negative. It's just what it is. It's low stakes television. So rather than calling it meandering or static, I feel like what they gave us was something a little more on par with old school Star Trek. If you remember, we already talked about the similarities and how they built in within the myth arc itself for this season a creative way to harken back to old narrative form from the original series as well as Next Generation, where you had the episode it A, B, C, D, you know, went through all its parts. And then by the end of the episode, you had these aspects or these moments between our crew. In the original series, it was always Spock, McCoy, and Kirk, and they would kind of summarize in a philosophical way what happened. And
like a reflection.
Yeah, it's a moment of self-reflection in many ways. Discovery, ingeniously, in my opinion, found a way to harken back to that old style, but built it into the episode because of the progenitor mystery. So at the end of every episode, they collect a clue and then they discuss it. And it actually organically instigates these philosophical reflections.
Yeah.
I think that part is really cool.
Yeah.
The thing that you're having a problem with is that because we've been conditioned that pretty much all modern television now is serialized and there isn't a lot of room for low stakes, you now expect every episode to be an episode that just lights the world on fire. It has to answer big questions. It has to move the story forward.
Move the story forward, yeah.
And personally, David, I'm right there with you. I prefer episodes like that, especially when you're dealing with Star Trek Discovery. And I think that's another thing you're feeling. You might be feeling a sense of anxiety knowing that this is the final season and that we're 6 episodes in and there's only 10 episodes total and we really didn't do much.
Mm-hmm.
In a season that's already been condensed, we went from like, what, 17, 18 episodes in its first season, and we slowly, every season have cut back now to where we only have 10. So I think what you're feeling it's possibly a sense of anxiety knowing that the end is just around the corner and it doesn't really feel like all of these parts are moving as quickly as they should.
Yeah.
Is that a fair analysis?
No, that is a fair analysis when you put it that way, because like that's how I think that pretty much sums up how I feel is kind of like we only have 4 episodes left. And you mean to tell me that basically in by episode 6, we are no closer to getting to the progenitors and we still have to get, I believe, one or two more pieces, I think, after this. So by how Discovery's logic and how their format has been going, episode 7 should be another, we find a piece, we move to the next clue. Episode 8 is find a piece, move on to the next clue, leaving 9 and 10 to wrap everything up. Locke and Mull's story, Culber's story, Burnham's story, book story with Mull.
And also little things like, what's the deal with Kovich? You cannot, I do agree with this, especially after this episode, you cannot end Star Trek Discovery without explaining what the fuck is going on with Kovich. And I've always been all about it because he's interesting. And there's this aura of mystery that just permeates this character. And I think it's really worked for this character. However, now that we're coming to an end, we do need some contextualization. We need to understand why he chooses to meet Burnham in this sterile faux environment.
The infinity room.
Why is there secrecy to everything he does? How and why does he have a legal pad with the names of the scientists on it? Are we going to get answers to that? I'm hoping we do, because it seems strange. Now, I understand that he's been a character that's been built around kind of like an eccentric personality. He's mm-hmm. a little eccentric, and that's part of the reason why he's interesting. Is it simply characterization, or does it mean something? Because at this point in the game, 5th final season, 6 episodes in, whether or not you thought this was the final season or not, if you decide to have Kovich say something about his affinity towards, you know, what was it, 20th century or 19th century, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, there's got to be something meaningful to it. Or I should say, there should be something meaningful in the way of connection. There has to be a connection to the story, or at least some ultimate reveal as to what Kovich is really about. Because we still don't know, really. We assume, because they've told us, that he is a Federation representative, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But to me, he's seeming more and more like Section 31.
Even higher, I think. It's kind of like the powers that Kovich does sometimes. It's kind of like makes me question, you have to answer who the heck this guy is by the end of the day. And every single episode, don't get me wrong, I'm with you. Kovich has been kind of like the one addition since the last season where I have loved that character, but he's essentially turning into the smoking man from the X-Files.
That's awesome though.
And it's awesome, but like
smoking man had 9 seasons to be fleshed out. 9
seasons to be fleshed out.
Yeah. And you understood his motivations. I don't feel like we understand Kovich's motivations. No. And if you're going to use him this much, which I'm happy with, because he is an interesting and really cool character, it's going to have to mean something eventually.
It is. And that's what I mean is like by this episode, you know, like what you mentioned earlier, it does feel like low stakes television where it's kind of like, here is the episode of the day where you can skip this episode and move on to the next one without truly pulling your narrative forward that much. And I'm like going, you have a condensed season of 10 episodes. You only have 4 episodes left. This episode could have actually helped your myth arc further by pushing it further. Keep us moving forward.
Yeah. And the reason why I even question Kovich's involvement is because we already have Admiral Vance. We have the president of the Federation that probably would make more sense to be handling Burnham at this point. They should be the ones, in all actuality, that should be guiding Burnham and speaking to her about the progenitors and the mission. Instead, she's answering to Kovich. And it makes sense because they built it into this season as to why she needs to report to him. But we, as an audience, don't know why must report to Kovich. So I will say, David, that I get your, I don't want to say I'm frustrated because I'm not frustrated, but I understand where you're coming from because I am getting a little anxious as well because I know we're getting so close to the end. I'm afraid that we might not get some of these answers. But before I complain, I do want to wait till we get to the end because then I will say, yes, David, you were right. They were meandering. They had no plan with Kovich, but we won't really know that until the end, until in my opinion.
And that's
but it doesn't disregard or invalidate your thoughts on it meandering because I do feel like you have a valid point.
And that's why it's so conflicting to me because, as I said earlier, I like this episode. This episode was good. There was a lot of good things I could take out of this episode for each individual character, right? But that's the thing. You have so many characters and so many things going on this season. I feel like we need to make sure to tie everything up.
Yeah.
And like, even like Saru, where the heck is his story going? Because we don't know where that went for like
two episodes now.
And his whole story arc has to wrap up. So it's kind of like
it'll end with him making sweet, sweet love.
Sweet, sweet love finally.
Yeah.
And getting his ganglion
to the Vulcan. Yeah. Vulcan sex with a Kelpian. That's the stuff of nightmares. I mean, I've always had a fantasy about Vulcans. I have no problem, you know, making sweet, sweet love to an emotionless being. Listen, I've been married twice, so. So stupid. If you're curious about Kelpian sex, I think you might want to look into hentai porn.
Hentai porn, yeah.
I definitely can see Saru being a protagonist in some hentai porn. He has the gangly eye.
I mean, he has that peacock thing going when those gangly eye just grow. It's I'm almost curious, but I'm also scared to actually know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So let's talk about Culbert's arc a bit more because at the center of this episode, it really was about, you say meandering. I say it was a little bit about reiterating and continually contextualizing certain aspects of our story so that the casual viewers who don't always analyze things very deep, which that's how 95% of the people who watch TV, they're casual viewers. So an episode like this reiterates things in more tangible ways. They reify the abstract so that people definitively understand what the series is doing and the direction they're going. And that's pretty much what they did with this episode. You had Culbert's arc, which was seamlessly, I'd say it worked seamlessly with Burnham and Tilly's story, creating this parallel narrative that delved into the intricacies of faith, spiritual awakening, and how these components ultimately function as part of the human condition. For example, you have faith and spirituality. They're typically are associated as integral aspects of the human experience, which typically will provide comfort, guidance, and a sense of purpose. So if you understand some of these theories and ideas, you can start seeing how they fully form and actually work within the overall series thus far. And whether through organized religion, personal beliefs, or spiritual practices, they contribute significantly to our overall well-being and understanding of life. So when you take a step back, and you think about what this episode is or this season has done so far. We've discussed all of this, the meaning of life, the purpose of life. What does the discovery of the progenitors really mean for humanity? What does it mean that we are seeking out the creators of our existence?
Yeah.
What does this mean? So when you look at what they were doing with this alien species, the Hemlinites, many of these aspects worked so well with the myth arc of the season because we were dealing with the questioning of purpose and meaning and how they interact with faith and belief in our perceived gods. So by displacing the situation at heart of the season, or at the heart of the season, you know, seeking out the progenitors, technology, and hopes of uncovering truth and meaning, with the Denobulans and the Hemlinites, the writers actually reaffirm and strengthen several key themes of the season.
Yeah.
So the audience was able to subtly assimilate key moments of emotional and thematic understanding. For example, the things dealing with Ovaz and his daughter, Reva, I believe is what their names were, mm-hmm. were key to this, especially when taking a deeper look at the waning moments of the episode where Burnham talks to Ovaz. It was not a refutation of spiritual belief, but actually an advocation for, you know, recognizing that scientific explanations are not necessarily a rejection of the spiritual, which I really like that thought, that that goes hand in hand with a lot of similar episodes in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I like this because, as we have said numerous times in this season, Star Trek has always flirted with the theology, not so much traditional doctrine, but more of a neutral approach to greater theological understanding, and more often than not, a propensity towards esoteric spirituality.
Yes.
So when you look at everything they're doing, that's it works. That's why I can't look at this episode and say, oh, it sucked.
Yeah.
Everything they did makes sense. Mm-hmm. The components worked. It was intellectual in its own right. But I also question, we've already kind of come to terms that this is what the season is about. And, yes. I think that's the problem you're having.
No, that is.
Because all of this we already understood. But to my point, we understood it because we overanalyze. This episode kind of overtly stated a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Especially with
for the general audience, Dave, does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Because especially when you take into context about Culber's story, I mean, this season, Culber's story is actually one of my favorite points in every episode because they take the grandiose philosophical statements that Burnham and the crew have to do when they do all these tests, but then they parallel it with Culber's, where Culber is actually a much more like nuanced and more almost like a introspective look at it instead of this grandiose look.
He's almost a tool to help make sense of the story.
Yeah, he's the one that basically...
He's a narrative component this season in a lot of ways.
He's the narrative component for the audience to feel comfortable with what Discovery is trying to say.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to say it.
And like making his journey more personal than like this grandiose adventure that Burnham's on, it helps the audience actually. I think it's one of the bonuses of this season where it's like, yes, they're reiterating a lot of what they're saying, but they're making sure kind of almost like due diligence. They don't want to lose the audience. They want to make sure the audience understands what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally dig that. I like what they do, but you have to be careful about doing that too much. Like there's a certain fine.
There's a cutoff.
Yeah. There's like a tightrope that you have to walk where I'm going to reiterate. Cool. But if I do it too much, like if the next episode, it's just the same thing where it's like the equation of Discovery season 5 is A plus B equals C.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you keep doing that every single episode, it's going to get redundant.
Yeah. There is a cutoff to this. I'm okay with a relatively low stakes episode.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just one,
if
we do this again anymore before the end, I have to question the strategy because then I feel like, okay, well, you guys really didn't have much of a story here this season. Exactly. You simply came up with a really basic myth arc and then used an episodic format to kind of carry this myth arc along mm-hmm. on its shoulders. But at the end of the day, it's really not about the myth arc. It's simply about the episodic functions of how you chose to write your series this year.
And you're right. I mean, we can't judge that till we see the very end, till we see how they wrap everything up.
I will say there are listeners out there that have reached out saying that some don't really like the shortened season and they're questioning some of the actions behind the writing decisions, I guess I should say. They're questioning some of the writing decisions. But then there are others that say this is their best or their favorite season of Discovery so far. And in a lot of ways, David, doesn't that just simply represent Star Trek Discovery as a whole?
Oh, yeah.
It's just split.
It's split.
It's split it'll, with the fandom has been split on Discovery since day one.
It'll always be like that. And I do think one of the parts of the equation, now that you've explained my sense of meandering.
Yeah, your fears.
I'm a bit more comfortable with it. And it's like part of the equation is how much is it that people want Star Trek in a certain format? Not in like, you know, context, but we've been trained as Star Trek fans. This is how your series should go.
Yeah, because David, look, I will be perfectly honest. I like Strange New Worlds quite a bit, but I do not feel like the episodic return is working in its favor at all. So I feel like the Kurtzman thinks he's giving the Star Trek fans what they want.
Yes.
By going back to older formats of writing. But that to me signals Kurtzman's overall misunderstanding of Star Trek as a whole.
Exactly.
I know people say I'm a Kurtzman shill. We've been accused of being shills for Kurtzman, but the actuality or the truth of it is that I feel like Kurtzman has made a lot of mistakes.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, he's also been a person who has shown his desire to change and adapt. He is making shows not for himself. He wants to make the right things. He wants to make the right decisions, but he's not always making those right decisions. I don't think he could be accused of the same things that, say, people accuse Disney of. Of just woke ideology, and that's all the fuck they care about, which I disagree with that too. Mm-hmm. But that's the general consensus, it seems like, when people aim their hatreds at Tart, at Disney, that's usually what they're launching at them, those types of accusations. With Kurtzman, I don't think that's the case, because if you look at everything Kurtzman's done, he literally has tried to make changes every single year since he took control.
Yeah, and he's trying to adapt to his audience, and there is something to be said that you could say that the audience right now in television is more geared for low stakes television, where they're now going through that transition where you're seeing series that you're like going, there's not much here. Just even outside of Star Trek, there's not much here, but it's really gaining an audience and the audience love it because low stakes television. It's kind of like that one where they give us a lot of content and it's up to the audience to make understanding of it. And that's
if people still don't understand, think of Breaking Bad is not low stakes television.
Yes.
But compare that with CSI. That's low stakes television.
That is low stakes television.
So, and it's not bad. And Discovery, for the most part, I'd say for the most part, has not been something that I would call low stakes television.
Yeah.
However, this season, it does seem like they are taking some of those notes of older Star Trek and finding comfort in those low stakes moments. And as a whole, I don't have a problem with that. Look at Deep Space Nine. Some of those low stakes episodes are some of the best for fleshing out character.
Absolutely.
We had this discussion on our Patreon show just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When we were refuting Kurtzman's fucking annoying comment that filler television or filler Star Trek isn't necessary. I'm like, motherfucker, filler episodes were the episodes where we had some of the best development of character at times.
Yes.
So that's why I say, I think Kurtzman means well. I think he's trying, but at the end of the day, I think we're all going to look back at this time in Star Trek history and say that the problem was that Kurtzman didn't quite ever fully grasp what he has.
What he has.
What he's in charge of.
Because if he looks at like the historical implications of like how Star Trek was built, it's very different.
Yeah. So, David, we also had some technology and some more technology. And I also got a, let's see here. I forgot who it was. I think it was one of our Patreon subscribers sent me a message that they have a problem with Star Trek Discovery's blasé, I guess, the blasé way they deal with technology. Now, I don't completely agree with that. I feel like the Kurtzman era is slightly guilty, not all the time, but more with Star Trek Picard's first season, of technology that isn't actually steeped in real science. That's something that a lot of the Star Trek fans are sticklers for, because despite some of the aspects of Star Trek that seem very fantastical, many of its technologies are based on actual science. Mm-hmm. It may not be proven science yet, but it's theoretical science.
Theoretical, yeah.
Star Trek Discovery, for the most part, has definitely worked within the theoretical. I know people bash the mycelial network, but that is actually based on theoretical science. Read about it. It's actually really intriguing stuff, how fungus communicates and connects the entire world. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things like the personal transporter that we've talked about that I feel like they should explain how personal transporting devices work, because we understand pattern buffers, where the material of the human is stored. How does this take effect when you're on a planet just using your device? Where are the physical patterns? Where are you being stored when you're on a planet and your ship is nowhere to be found? Because you could say, well, there's like a satellite connection that immediately just stores your pattern inside your ship. But what if the ship goes away?
Exactly.
Because you can also say, well, is it stored in the device itself? That doesn't really make sense, because how would you
store a device
that basically rematerialize yourself? Device. Exactly. There are problems I have with some of these aspects that Discovery just ignores. The new one that does bother me, Dave, is the retinal tricorder.
Yes.
I'm like, motherfucker, you just pulled that out of your asshole. We've never heard this before.
A retinal tricorder.
And I know you guys said, well, this new experimental retinal tricorder. You couldn't take 30 seconds and try to explain it?
Because all it really felt about the retinal tricorder, and I understand a lot of grumpiness from Star Trek fans about this, is like they're just trying to make a connection to technology that we are seeing today, like with the glasses.
Right.
With the technology glasses. Well, if we could do it with glasses today, they can do it in the future with a retinal thing.
But these are the questions I have, David. How is it being controlled?
Exactly.
Is there some type of neural link? Is the brain controlling everything? Okay, well then if that's the case, if everyone has like neural links now embedded in through their brain.
When do these neural links get implanted?
Right. But I'm saying that if that's the case, then you need to explain that, because that actually would fix a lot of these issues I'm having with the modern 32nd century technologies.
Oh, yeah. It's almost kind of like, you know, one of the scenes that I liked, but it bothered me with the technology, was the Abuela scene with Culber. Because essentially
he mentioned some type of neural connection.
Yes. And I'm like going, wait a minute. So is this a scan done by the ship?
I assume that they're reading his brain.
Yeah.
And then they're taking things from his brain and then projecting it the best way it can in front of him in the form of a hologram. And it's also intuitive.
Yes.
So it reads him, knows what he's looking for, and adapts to it.
Yeah.
That was all how I just described that, David, is all assumption.
It's all assumption. They didn't explain it.
Yeah. But at least they did throw one word about something about neurological, something dealing with them reading the brains. Okay. That at least softened.
It softened the blow.
This new technology we haven't seen before. So Discovery, I will say, they have some problems. It's not just Discovery. It's the Kurtzman era. They don't really spend, in my opinion, the needed attention to explaining things. And oftentimes, David, Star Trek Next Generation didn't have to explain things. And when I say Next Generation, I should just say the Next Generation era. They didn't over-explain things, but they also used terminologies.
Yes.
That we understood, because a lot of those terminologies were grounded in real science. So then when they would combine it with more futuristic aspects, we understood that it was at least an idea grounded or steeped in actual science, or at least theoretical science. With Discovery, I don't feel like there's that type of attention to detail. And when you're dealing with Star Trek, you have to.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been built into the DNA of Trek at this point.
It is the one thing that basically a lot of writers of Star Trek have stated. The beauties of TNG was their use of science gobbledygook, where Data would actually be able to say things.
Mm-hmm.
And normally doesn't make any sense. But because they threw in just that little bit of tone that there's some real science behind it, Data sounded incredibly intelligent.
Yeah. Look at all of the episodes in Voyager, because I'm in the middle of doing another rewatch here, so it's fresh in my mind. Whenever they're talking about any of Seven of Nine's implants, because how many times in Voyager did they rely on some Borg implant to do something?
Yes.
And it sounds silly, but it always was based on science, and they explained exactly how this node did this and why this particular node was dormant and why it was activated. There was always an explanation. Here, with a retinal tricorder, it just is suddenly just because they needed it.
Yeah.
That does really, I will say, David, that does annoy me.
It does. And it's one of those things that I do understand a lot of Star Trek fans distaste for Discovery, because Discovery is infamous for it. Because
I don't know if they're infamous. I would say Picard season one was more infamous, especially with, you know, all you have to use is the power of imagination to repair the ship.
That's different. That's different. That's
the power different. Of imagination.
That's different. Discovery, the problem that Discovery has is because they traveled so far into the future. They are expected.
Yeah.
You have to bring new technology, because technology has to actually adapt, and it has to
evolve. And that's something we talked about recently, right?
Yeah. But the problem Discovery has is like they embrace the fact that they have to evolve the technology, but they fail sometimes to just give us that little explanation.
But honestly, David, yes, they're way into the future, but a lot of this technology isn't overly fantastical.
It isn't.
It is technology that I would say could be even more so in the near future. A retinal tricorder is something that we could very well see, maybe not a tricorder, but a retinal implant of some type is something that we have now.
Yes.
So it's not hard to imagine that, you know, 1,000 or so years in the future, we have this retinal holographic overlay over our eye, which again, that's an assumption. Is it a retinal hologram? Is it simply a condensed mini version of the holographic tricorders they now have in front of them?
Yes.
I assume. But again, what am I doing?
Assuming.
And I don't want to assume.
Because everyone knows what happens when you assume.
This isn't my story. I don't want to assume. I want to be told certain things.
Yes.
Certain things. Doesn't mean I want to be spoon-fed story ideas. But when it comes to things like this, they need to be explained at least briefly.
Oh, yeah. And you don't need to do a huge explanation. A single piece of dialogue will be good.
Yep. That's what we always say.
That's it.
Well, Dave, what do you think they're doing? And I want to hear your thoughts on this, and then we're going to close out our show. What do you think they're doing with Culbert and Stamets? When you create this scene, which I will say, I do like Stamets way more this season.
Oh, yeah.
He's finally lost his morosity. He acts like a normal person that's likable for the first time in five seasons. I actually dig him a lot more this year. But what was the point of bringing them together? Having them have this discussion about Culbert's spiritual awakening. Culbert, knowing that it's a conversation he wasn't really looking forward to having with Stamets, because Stamets is strictly a man of science.
Yes.
Now, I do like the metaphor there, because in a lot of ways, it's showing the split in our culture today. We have people who the science is now their religion, scientism.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the people on the other side who reject science a bit, and they're more about the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a moment of bringing those two ideas together in a more compromising and diplomatic way. And that does work for me.
Oh, yeah.
And you have these discussions. But at the end of that discussion, it was clear that Culbert was not satisfied with Stamets simply just being understanding.
Yes.
He wanted to have someone that he can speak to about this.
Hence why he goes to Book.
Which is why he goes to Book. So that all makes sense. That's very much a part of human nature. I can totally make sense of the scene. But in TV, we know that nothing should just be there just because.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of highlighting Culbert's not exasperation, maybe his slight frustration that Stamets doesn't quite understand what he's going through? Was it simply a way to get him and Book to talk? Was it solely for the purpose for Book to float that genius idea about the human, that he never understood this human propensity to think that something meaningful can't just be something meaningful for the person, for the individual?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a very interesting philosophical thought. Was it to float that idea? Does it mean something that we're going to get to by the end? And does it have to do with the fact that the progenitors will essentially mean different things for different people on that crew?
Yeah.
Is that the purpose? Because it was a very purposeful discussion. There was intent behind the scene with Stamets and Culbert.
Yeah, because
what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it has more to do with the ending ideas pertaining to the progenitors, or do you think it's designed that by the end of this season there may be a split here between Stamets and Culbert? Maybe Culbert has matured spiritually to the point where maybe he's outgrown his relationship with Stamets.
And that's the thing, is like, are they doing a story of Culbert's?
Is he transcending?
Transcending.
Is that what are we going to see Culbert transcend?
Yeah. Is he going to be like splitting away from Stamets, and their relationship will ultimately end? And that's why we have this scene, because like, for me, I really, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing that mm-hmm. we're left with these questions, because
no, this part isn't a negative.
This part right here, I found really, really fascinating. And it was really engaging because we finally got to see Stamets and Culbert act like a relationship.
Yeah.
Where you have this dialogue between them.
A non-contrived
relationship. Thing. You get to see Stamets feel generous. There was some really genuine love between Stamets that Stamets has for Culbert. And like, it's understandable when Culbert still feels frustrated because here's this person that he loves, but that person doesn't truly understand them.
Yeah. And I totally get that, because I was just talking to a friend recently who's in a relationship, and they were talking about this state of existentialism that they're currently in. Mm-hmm. And they were talking to me about it because they know that's my thing. I love existentialism and the study of it, the examination of individual existentialism as well as the societal existentialism. And they were talking to me about it because they said that the person they're with, their significant other, they don't understand what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
They're receptive. They want their listeners.
Yeah.
But they're not giving them what they need, which is not just a listening ear. They need to understand. They need the understanding of yes. what they're going through. The empathy.
There you go. And that's the thing that I found really interesting, that they took it further to discussion between him and Book, because Book has been portrayed as the most empathetic character in the entire season since he actually showed up.
Kind of built into who
he
is.
It's built into who he is
the
because
fact he can, that he can communicate with creatures.
Be empathetic.
Organic life, yeah.
Yeah, that's his whole shtick.
Mm-hmm.
And like...
And he's also been going through a lot of existentialism with the destruction of his homeworld.
Of his homeworld. And then you have like Culber, who is the man seeking purpose and seeking, you know, like an existential crisis, essentially, and goes to the one person who is empathetic.
Or empathic.
Or yeah. Empathic.
Yeah. I do like what they're doing with Culber. He's always been one of my favorite characters. Well, not always. I'd say season two is when he started to become one of my favorite characters. And I know last episode we said that looking back at Star Trek Discovery, years down the road, we may point to Tilly and say this might be one of the best characters of Discovery. But I would also add Culber. I think Culber and Tilly had a fully, well, it depends how Culber ends.
Yeah.
Depends on how this season ends and what it means for him. But when Culbert talks about dying, being reborn, it seems like the last couple seasons has been him essentially coming to terms with this transcendent action, you know, of coming back to life.
Yeah.
That he is not the same person. He can't be the same person. And it seems like he is coming to terms with that. And with the introduction of the progenitors, that there is this species that created all life. It's exacerbated or instigated an anxiety that's probably been dormant since he has been reborn. And now he's being forced to look at his mortality and purpose and what all of this means. So depending on how it ends, Dave, he may be also right up there with Tilly.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because I think what they've done with Culber is interesting, since if you study his character transition in a show about hardcore science, Culber's myth arc is totally based on faith. It's about spiritualism. It's about
transcendence.
Yeah. And like the whole idea that he goes through this transcendence from being born again. and it's kind of like, you know, the whole idea, someone was writing like a whole article about Culber that I found interesting about comparing Culber's journey as a character in Star Trek to someone like who is born again, you know, through faith, like born again Christian, born again, going through a religious transcendence and understanding what their faith is, the same thing that Culber is going through. And I'm like going, when I read it, I was like, oh my God. Yeah. If you take a look at the parallels and like the kind of symbolism that they've been using with Culber, it is a very faith-based storyline that they're doing.
David, why don't you give me your final thoughts?
My final thoughts on this episode, as I said, I came into this episode very conflicted because by the end of it, I felt the episode was still spinning its wheels. But I also really liked a lot of like the elements they introduced and put forth in the episode. I liked the whole idea of Culber's story paralleling the journey of the Holy Grail and, you know, finding purpose or finding illumination and paralleling that with the adventures of Burnham going through this like treasure hunt for the progenitor weapon. And I've loved that since day one. So overall, I gave this a 87 when it came to an episode. I only like lowered my score a bit just because by the end of it, I was very conflicted in a weird sort of way. I felt very like Culber, where it's like, what is the purpose of this?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from. Overall, I like the episode. I do feel like it was a relatively strong episode as opposed to being a weak episode of Star Trek Discovery. I do question the order in which the episode was delivered to us, just because it feels like we should probably be ramping up because we're so close to the end, especially because this is a drastically shortened season.
Mm-hmm.
The writing was acceptable. The ideas make sense to the overall story and everything we've seen so far. Also, something we didn't talk about, the Rainer and Adira stuff was great.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
I really liked their interaction and how Rainer is not just simply trying to learn lessons from the crew anymore, but now he has taken more of a leadership and teaching role, like a first officer should. And he's helping Adira find her confidence again. I like all that stuff as well. That's just great character development, period. But overall, I do see where you're coming from. It does feel like a reiteration, maybe not a meandering, but it feels like they're reiterating. And as I had already gone through, I get what they're possibly trying to do. Make the abstract more tangible for the typical viewing audience. So I'm going to give this an 86% on the RMD score. And this brings us to the end. If you guys want to get more Star Trek from the Holodeck discussions, you can subscribe to our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/rainmandigital and pledge $5 or more a month, and you will gain access to all of our additional Star Trek from the Holodeck discussions. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.